Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Hiyadaya. My pleasure to be with you. Glad to be here this week. Last week, I got food poisoning, a bad batch of ceviche, and I passed out. I went completely down for the count. It took me until middle of the following day before I knew what side was up or even cared what side was up. So, I apologize to you. I also have to apologize both to you, Kirk, and to JB. I am in an irascible mood. I will probably be in an irascible mood for better part of the next month or so. I am one chapter into the second volume of Questioning Paul. Questioning Paul will be four volumes before it is done. I have completed the rewrite of Volume 1. It will soon finish the editing process at Jackie's Magic, and it'll be available at Amazon. But it is torture to go back in and have to reread all of that and deal with that scout. He was a real skunk. I mean, it is just astonishing that a person that there was this big a nincompoop. He was psychotic. He was delusional. He was likely a psychopath. He was clearly a narcissist. That someone that might have even had schizophrenia, that was that overall kind of off the charts insane, became the father of the largest religion in human history. It's almost amazing that Yahweh took the time to warn us against Shaul, and there's so many scores upon scores of prophecies that condemn Shaul. And it is pretty amazing that Yahweh took the time to warn us against it. And JB, it's good to have you here, but my friend, you do have to turn on off the mic when you're typing on your keyboard, because it is exceedingly loud. But
sorry about that.
But good to have you here. It's music to my ears, because I know that you're here when I hear the keyboard. You could probably also get a quieter keyboard. That would be another opportunity.
Yeah, I keep meaning to go to the store and do that, and I just keep forgetting when I'm at the store.
Yeah, I know. It's anyway, I wanted to start with something that we could agree to disagree on, but I want to start by talking about what happened. I think it was Wednesday night of this week when a Trump rally, where Trump was bemoaning his stolen election, that he inspired those that were around him to march on the Capitol. Now, he didn't tell them to plot an insurrection. He didn't tell them to go be militant, but he did encourage them to march on the Capitol, and they did so. And I did watch probably 5 hours of video of what occurred in real time. And it was my assessment from what I saw is that somewhere around 99% of those who did march on the Capitol were very low-key. Most of them were seasoned citizens. They were plumpsters, clearly out of shape. They had one hand holding up a Trump banner and the other hand taking selfies of themselves. They were about as threatening as a declawed pudding cap. I mean, they had nothing going for them. And they just were meandering, saying, hey, wow, we're in Washington, D.C., and let's walk up to the Capitol. Now, there were some, because the Trumpites are filled with conspiratorial nutcases. Q was being represented. The Proud Boys were being represented. There were neo-Nazis in the crowd carrying their stars and bars. There was even a guy wearing Auschwitz, the work will set you free shirts. It was quite an interesting crowd. And those that climbed into the U.S. Capitol, you do have to say that there's something seriously wrong with the U.S. government that has 10,000 rules on building codes. And yet the windows of the U.S. Capitol were knocked out with a piece of plastic. They just crumbled as if they were paper thin and just fell out of the frames and went on the floor. Watching that was to me amazing, that the kind of glass that you could not use in a house. You know, I have tempered glass doors and windows. I don't even have impact glass. And you were to try to do that with glass here, and it would laugh at you. Anyway, they did go in, and a number of them got physical with police. None of them had guns. None of them had clubs. None of them had weapons of any kind. But they did try to press on beyond the cops. And the cops were armed to the teeth. It is amazing how many weapons the U.S. federal agents carry around with them. Nonetheless, the whole scene was despicable, and Trump deserves a lot of shame for it. But the most amazing thing to me was the way that politicians and the media reacted. First, they wanted to call it an insurrection. Well, I'm here to tell you, they were all carried American flags, most of them anyway. And the last thing that these people had on their mind was insurrection. They were patriots. The people who want to overturn America are the Black Lives Matter group. They are communists. And they're open about the fact that they wish to overturn the U.S. Constitution and the country itself, its whole economic underpinnings. There were no looting. There were no beatings of people. There was no arson. Very little destruction of property, unless you call a broken window destruction of property. And yet, all of the talking heads made it sound like that they were infinitely worse than Black Lives Matter. In fact, people like LeBron James, I like him as a basketball player, but it's obvious the man didn't go to school and is not very smart. He comes on after a loss to San Antonio and says, you know, we live in two different Americas. If they had been like me in black, there would have been mass murder. Hundreds would have been killed. No. We watched Black Lives Matter riot, burning, arson, beating, destruction of property, screaming, enraged in places like Minnesota.
Seattle. Yeah.
And places like Seattle, places like Portland, and even when they protested in Washington, destroying people's businesses, looting them, beating people with clubs, shooting, belligerent, arson, you name it, and kicking old people, pulling them out of stores, kicking them while they're laying on the ground. And to hear the talking heads in Washington and in the media, they were choir boys. But these people that didn't have any weapons, didn't torch anything, didn't loot anything, unless you call it envelope from someone's desk looting,
Pelosi,
are insurrectionists and a angry mob. And the media has teed off on it as to make a comparison and to pretend that, well, Seattle must be a lovely place. Portland is so charming because, well, they were all peaceful protesters. It's like we have absolutely lost our minds. That is not to say that what happened in Washington was good. It was only good in the sense that it should tell people there is no hope for the United States government. The country is deeply divided. You have absolute idiotic morons on both sides. There isn't anyone out there who would have any chance of resolving any of the problems that face this country. And the divide is between total and complete nincompoops on the left and on the right. And so to see that manifest so egregiously on television should tell us it's over. Just over. There is no hope. And I hope that is what the one thing that we can take out of this is that you need to come home now. It's also interesting to see now with lockdowns more egregious than ever before. You know, California a month ago going into the toughest lockdown of any state in the nation, and worldwide, country after country going into exceedingly tough lockdowns where businesses are shuttered, people's right to work are shuttered, people are being locked up so that they can hardly leave their homes, can't work, total deprivation of their rights, that the rates of COVID infection are skyrocketing. I mean, it's like a damn hockey stick. It was, you know, it went up and then it spiked and then it went down a little bit, and currently the spike is damn near straight up. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. It doesn't work. Why are we destroying our economy, destroying liberty, destroying the work ethic of people to make a bad situation worse? Well, that people would say, oh, because the emergency rooms are to capacity. Well, that's because you were so stupid, you took people who were infected with this virus into a place where people are really sick. Why would you do that, something that stupid? Why didn't you read the Torah, for crying out loud? The Torah says, don't keep them in your cities. Take them outside. Quarantine them. Build a beautiful facility for them. We've had over a year. Build quarantine hospitals. Take the sick people such that they don't infect other sick people. It isn't that hard. And let everybody else work. Crying out loud is just stupid what we have done. Oh, and then you get old Fauci, and he says, you know, I just made up that 70% number, saying that that herd immunity would require 70% of the population contracting COVID. And I said, you know, but the numbers came out and said, well, you know, in fact, I think he said 80%. He said, well, the numbers came out and said, yeah, it's much lower than that. I figured I could fudge it and no one would matter, and it would be good for people to to see it that way. Deliberately lying. I don't know what to say. Now, there is, for those listening and wondering, okay, they now have a number of vaccines. We've talked a little bit about the fact that it's a messenger RNA vaccine. It's unproven. It's something that never has been used in all of human history. Now, that's not that big a deal in the sense that there's a lot of things that are new in the human experience.
Yeah.
And clearly, vaccines have been probably the greatest advancement in modern medicine and humanity in terms of saving and protecting lives. So vaccines have been a tremendous benefit. It's one of the reasons why I just laugh at the conspiratorial nutcases that are so convinced that the COVID is fake. There is no such thing as COVID. And they created it so they can vaccinate us, and the whole purpose of the vaccine is to control us.
No.
Pardon?
It's a real thing.
No, I'm telling you, COVID is real. Mortality rate probably isn't just individual mortality rate, apart from people who are dying of other diseases, that they die with COVID because of the other diseases. The mortality rate is probably a little greater than the flu. It does have a greater RO effect than the which is its tendency to be contagious than the flu. But it is a real virus, and it is contagious. And some people that get it have long-term negative effects. Most people that get it are asymptomatic. But the fact is that we need a vaccine for it. And I can guarantee you the U.S. government and the world is not trying to fake the vaccine. These nutcases go for as far as to say that the celebrities and politicians are all in on it, and their injections are all with retractable needles, and they're really not getting the vaccine. There's a reason that Yahweh told us, don't be conspiratorial, because it makes you sound like an absolute unmitigated idiot. Speaking of idiots, the Democrats want to impeach Trump a second time, this time for insurrection. Now, the fact is they have a Democrat-controlled Congress, so they will likely get their impeachment, and they will tell each other how wonderful they are for saving the democracy as a result of that. The Senate, of course, is not going to approve it, and he's out in a week, so why are they just trying to stir people up? It's like the left is rabid with their anti-Trump hatred. I was talking with my son a couple of nights ago, and we were talking during the riots. He called me the march on the Capitol. And, you know, what we talked about was that I have said from the beginning that Donald Trump is a narcissist. With a narcissist, you always are worried about something terrible happening. And the terrible with Donald Trump turned out to be beyond his rhetoric, which is just verbal diarrhea for fellow nincompoops. His most recent claim that this was the greatest landslide in history, that he won the election, and that it's Pawn Scum out there that is stealing it from him. Was there probably some election fraud? Yes. The new format of unsubstantiated absentee votes in those battleground states likely created enormous amounts of voter fraud. But you can't prove it. And while it was ripe for fraud, and the people that are playing the game would lie, cheat, and steal, even if it wasn't necessary. So it's probably was a lot of fraud, but you can't prove it. It doesn't do any good.
You can't prove what's
on. Right. So, good grief. Don't make an utter fool of yourself. So the only real risk of Donald Trump was what actually occurred here in this last week. And quite honestly, if you put what Trump did, what he accomplished, in context with his exceedingly stupid rhetoric, you still have a fairly neutral outcome. And that, I mean, he was darn near perfect when it came to Israel. Almost everything, I just read an article from the Jerusalem Post, and it says, you know, it's like Trump came up with plans that were actually written by Netanyahu. I mean, he was just, if you took Israel's, this is what we would like, but we know we're not going to get any of it, and they got all of it. It's just astounding. And, you know, his animosity towards China was warranted. His support of Brexit for England was warranted. His making trade such that the United States isn't an absolute doormat and patsy was warranted. His animosity towards the lawlessness and the anarchy that exists in places like Portland and Seattle and San Francisco, it's warranted. His more free approach to let's fight this virus by doing the right things, but not depriving people of their liberty and of their livelihoods, it was right. So we ought to look at things in context, and this phobia against Trump is misplaced. Other than his rhetoric, and in the last week, I will agree, he has the narcissist in Trump came out. One of the things, though, that it does is that cluster B, which narcissism is a cluster B disorder, it does give us a window into the mindset of cluster B. When Trump says that the election was stolen from him, he actually believes it. He actually believes it. And that's just the nature of a cluster B. They are delusional. They will make up their own set of facts. And then they determine whether somebody is worthy or scum, totally based upon whether or not they concur with their delusions. And, of course, he will even go after the most loyal of allies. So you couldn't have had a more loyal vice president than he had, and now he's locking him out of the White House. It truly gives us a lot of insight as to how unreliable humans are and how destructive our country has become. Just like a little window into that. Yesterday, the news came out that the U.S. government decided to fine Boeing $2.5 billion
for
the text and the emails that said that they weren't being wholly forthright with the FAA and the differences between the 737 previous versions and the Neo, the Max, I think is what they call it. And you say, okay, wait a minute. So you shut down the country. You make it impossible, essentially, for people to travel. The airlines are losing billions. They lost over 1,000 orders for 737s. They're on fumes as a company trying to survive all of this in the midst of the shutdown of the economy. And you think that maybe the right thing to do is, let's take another $2 billion from it. That'll fix it. That's like New York saying, boy, we need doctors. Please come. You just got to need doctors. Those same people. And then sending them a tax bill. Huge tax bills for having drawn wages while they were in New York trying to save New Yorkers. After they should be taxed twice with New York taking their fair share. It's totally and completely insane. And it's one thing that's interesting in the media, because the media is exceedingly liberal. When these protesters in Washington, as I said, most of which were just nothing but overweight seasoned citizens, with a flag in one hand or a Trump banner in one hand and a selfie phone in the other. And they looked about as dangerous, you know, as a balloon in a breeze. But they went and marched on what they thought was the problem. Government. So they were trying to say, you know, we think that government is the problem, and they wanted to hold their Trump banners and their Q banners and their whatever it was over the U.S. Capitol so they could express, this is our view, and, you know, na-na-na-na-na. What did the Black Lives Matter protesters go after?
They went after stuff.
Businesses.
All businesses.
Everything that they can get their hands on. Businesses. They torched them. They looted them. And they actually told those looters, oh, it's fine. You're entitled to it. Consider it reparations. And I will tell you that while I'm not a fan of the election was stolen, I don't know the degree of election fraud, but I do know that with the hundreds of millions of dollars Trump has brought in since the election, that if he could hire somebody, if he could hire an army of people to do an investigation, and none of them came up with any evidence of it, and the best he could do is commit a crime, begging the Secretary of State of Georgia to manufacture votes for him, which clearly is a crime. And if you listen to it, it's really pathetic. Then it didn't exist to the degree that Trump claims, because he has no proof of it. Now, I did listen to the congressional hearings, and I think there is considerable evidence of it, but not to the degree that he is claiming. But at least it isn't totally hypocritical for them to protest this election. I think that the absentee ballots, the way that they allowed them to be mailed in without substantiation, gives them some modicum of credibility. Black Lives Matter is completely and totally hypocritical. It has zero credibility. In fact, it's the antithesis of credibility because of the fact that 93% of the time that a black is murdered, it's by another black.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's an interracial murder, it's almost always blacks killing whites, not whites killing blacks. The opposite of what they claim is true.
I wanted to ask you and JB a couple of questions,
mm-hmm.
if I may.
Sure.
You know, I was having trouble asking myself what all these people so mad about. The federal government really doesn't do that much to us individually. You know, I'm more worried about the tax base, what they do in Texas and Sacramento than I am in Washington. But this is for black people. There are more black millionaires in this country than anywhere in the world forever. I mean, this
yeah.
is just unbelievable opportunities here.
You know, in the last two elections, a higher percentage of blacks voted for Trump than had voted outside of the Democratic ranks in history.
Uh-huh.
Because so many black families were helped when you're no longer telling them that you're oppressed and you have no hope and you've got to let us manipulate you, and you actually create
mm-hmm.
economic opportunity, black businesses thrived. And so there was a very significant percentage of blacks that actually voted for Trump. Now, in the Georgia senatorial runoff, that was not the case. What turned that is that blacks again were herded by Democrats and hoodwinked into believing that they were better off with those who actually treat them in a manner that is racist. Most conservatives who want less government do not try to divide people by race. But the Democrats, being exceedingly liberal, want to control people by race. So I have no idea why there would be a backlash by blacks at the government. They are taxed disproportionately little. They are they receive disproportionately more, almost four times more per capita in federal support. There are all manner of affirmative actions programs, small business loans are are specifically designed to favor minorities, they get it every which way as a benefit. So I don't know what the complaint is either.
So why is the protest not, instead of being going to Washington from my side against your side, why isn't it to reduce the power and the taxes and the military of the U.S. government and going back to state and local government to control more things? I mean, why does no one get that picture?
Yeah, state and local governments should be the primary source of taxation.
If you run the schools, if you run it like they're supposed to.
Everything. And the federal government should do very little. And of course, we were
never designed to do that much.
Right. And we shouldn't have, we should not have an established military. It should be eliminated. We'd be a safer, more vibrant country if we had no military. If all of that was positive economics as opposed to death and destruction, we'd be much better off if we weren't spending hundreds of millions of dollars spying on ourselves and the world. We would be better if we actually worked on our roads and infrastructure and electric grid and empowered private schools, which actually have to compete to survive. If we tax business less because we want more of it, those would all be exceedingly positive things that we could do. And unfortunately, we now have a left of left government. They have control of both houses and the White House. And so as a result, we will go in the direction of socialism and towards communism and become less and less viable and effective. Ultimately, it all collapses, and it's going to collapse sooner rather than later.
So last question. I have one little short question.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everybody's out there blaming somebody for their troubles, and which I'm having a hard time because in the midst of all this, you could still, other than the COVID thing, we were in pretty good shape as far as opportunity and everything. But how long do we have before the terrorist acts start? Do you think? I mean, we're just about at anarchy now. And the next blow will be Islamic terrorism.
Well, we have anarchy in places like San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. The most liberal of our cities have become homes for anarchy. Washington, D.C. is no longer a safe city. When the Black Lives Matter were going through Washington, the very politicians that were able to go back into the Capitol and have their vote that same night were harassed to the point they thought they were going to lose their lives by angry crowds during the Black Lives Matter. So we do have anarchy in many places. You know, and by the way, you know, when a LeBron says, you know, if those had been black people, they would not, they've been an entirely different result. No. They were white folks. They were not armed, and they were absolutely driven out of the Capitol. They were there for about 2 hours of selfie remembrances, and they were driven out at gunpoint with tear gas, with billy clubs, with the National Guard coming in, with police brought in from every place nearby by the busload. And when the Black Lives Matter folks went into cities, they were just essentially, the cities were ceded to them, and the blacks the police withdrew. It is the opposite of what the LeBrons, and it hurts me to say this because I've long been a sports fan, and LeBron was one of my favorites to root for, and so it hurts me to see him become so belligerent and so wrong in his perspective. He has just lost sight of reality, and of course it's makes him popular in the media, but might even make him popular with other players in the league. might even make him popular with liberals across the country. But being popular and being right are very different things, and we just have so few people that are right. The appropriate thing to do is to view everything in context and to condemn all forms of politics, all forms of conspiracy. You know, everybody wants to blame somebody else because their own lives are miserable. Well, their own lives are miserable for lots of reasons. And the whole concept of conspiracy on the left and the right is to blame somebody else for your problems as opposed to living your life in a meaningful way. And I announced before we began this show today that, or as we began it, that please pardon me, I'm dealing with Paul for the next month or so, and that's enough to make you a little bit irritable. I can tell you it makes Yahweh really irritable, and he's got much thicker skin than I have. It does make me nauseous to see people such that they cannot think, and they just want to blame somebody for everything. And now, I'm going to tell you, apart from having to expose and condemn Paul again, I love life. Oh, I just wake up every morning and see the sky and the sea and feel the breeze and look at the long light as it tickles the tops of the trees and the masts of the boats, and then glistens on the ocean and turns the sky all banner of different colors. Oh, I just look at it and say, what a wonderful world, what a wonderful life. And then to go in and have the opportunity to translate and to share Yahweh's word. It is a very fulfilling life. And that life is available to all of us. Behold, a time is coming. Yahweh reveals well in advance of it occurring. When I will enter into and cut with the family of Yisrael and the family of Yehudah a restored and renewed covenant. First, can you tell me any place in the godforsaken Christian New Testament where Yahweh speaks in first person?
Not once, not ever.
Not once, not ever.
Yeah, that would be my guess, yeah.
So, yeah, if you want the difference between, well, I guess there is one recorded. That's my beloved son, and I'm very proud of him. He went in the water. Yeah, he went in the water and got dunked. Oh, I was so proud. No. That whole episode is absolutely a farce, folks.
Yeah, didn't happen.
No. And if you're saying that it was then that the Spirit came upon him, what in the hell was he for those first 30 years? How in the world can you have, God is born to us on Christmas Day. We're celebrating the birth of God. And the Spirit didn't come on him until he was 30. And the Spirit comes on him in the shape of a bird. I mean, come on. Well, that's the only, that is the
they
only.
Didn't think this you, one through very well.
I didn't think this one through. Yeah, and of course it ends with their God dying and then the Passover lamb being resurrected. Somebody didn't read the front of the book.
Somebody didn't read, no.
I'm back! Oh, come on, folks. Behold, the time is coming, Yahweh reveals. Yahweh should have credibility. Yahweh, God's one and only name. He is 7,000 times in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He ought to have some credibility, and yet the Christians would rather believe Paul, who is clearly insane. And here
he makes it easy. All I have to do is believe.
Oh, that's right. Believe, but it actually isn't as easy as you make it out to be. Because if you read, which I'm right now, I'm working with Second Corinthians. If you read Second Corinthians, to believe that was divinely inspired. You have to believe that God is an absolute nincompoop.
Oh, yeah, but that's a lot easier than studying and learning and coming to know God. So, you know.
I don't know. Believing God is...
I don't have to think. I like people that don't have to think.
Yeah, but JB, believing that the creator of the universe inspired 2 Corinthians.
Oh, I know.
That takes faith way beyond anything that I can possibly imagine. So, you know, I've got to give him credit.
I've never been capable of faith to begin with. So
nor me. And faith in stupidity is well, stupid. So here is Yahweh. He has a lot of credibility. Countless prophecies that have been fulfilled, as he said, a creation account that is precisely accurate. A story of talking the talk and walking the walk. Yahweh reveals well in advance of it occurring when I will enter into and cut karat with the family of Yisrael and the family of Yahudah, which means, Christian, your foundation is rubbish. There cannot be a replacement for Yisrael and Yahudah if Yahweh's final act is to restore his relationship with Yisrael and Yahudah, Israel and Judah. It is impossible. You were fed a lie. The church did not replace Israel. And if the church didn't replace Israel, it has no reason to exist. And what is Yahweh going to do? He is going to restore and renew his covenant, which means there can't be a new one. Because his last and final act is not to confirm a new covenant. It's to restore, repair, and reaffirm the one and only covenant. This statement, which is the only statement in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms that Christians hang their hat on and say, this is proof there's a New Testament, is utterly destructive of the religion.
You have to do the typical religious thing and take a bunch of different parts of it out of context, present it, and then prove your point. You know, if you don't look at it in context, it confirms Christianity perfectly.
All you have to do is remove Yahweh's name. Then remove the fact that this is a prophecy, which he gets all of them right. And then remove the fact that he specifically says that it's going to be with Yisrael. And then you have to remove Yahudah as well. Then you have to mistranslate Kodesh as new as opposed to renewed. And then you have to take it completely out of context because you can't have any of what follows be considered, because if you do, it undermines everything you just did. So
sounds like the basic way Christians study scripture.
There you go. It will be somewhat different from the covenant, which to be revealed the way to the relationship I entered into and cut with their fathers. On the day I firmly took them by the hand with inspiring intent, overpowering the situation to bring them out of the realm of the crucibles of Egypt. Relationally, they broke my covenant. Although for a time I acted, and you have a choice here, as a husband or as a Lord with them, Yahweh reveals through his prophet. Let's go through this because there's some really interesting insights as to how this reaffirmation of the covenant is going to be different than what Yahweh established previously. So what he's saying is, to reveal the way to the relationship, when I entered into the relationship with their fathers, there was a moment in time where I had to firmly take them by the hand with inspiring intent and overpowered the situation. You think Yahweh likes to do that?
No.
Absolutely
against
not.
His nature, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I showed an intense resolve and was inflexible in my influence over them, overpowering them. He knew that as bad as it was in Egypt,
short window,
that they were not going to leave.
No.
They were afraid. They were petrified. They were paralyzed. They were not going to leave. The Egyptians weren't going to release them, and they didn't have the courage, the character, the fortitude to leave. But God knew, if I don't get them out of there, then I'm not honoring the promise I made to Abraham. If I don't get them out of there, then the entire purpose, which is to reveal the Torah and to show that my purpose with man is to free man from human oppression. I want to free humankind from government, from religion. No, you don't come to me from religion. My goal is to free you, to liberate you from religion. Government's not the solution. I want to liberate, to deliver you from government, from economic schemes that control and enslave, from military institutions. I firmly took them by the hand, what? To bring them out, to free them from the crucibles of oppression in Egypt. So, at that moment, Yahweh said, I'm going to force the situation. This is required so that I can demonstrate that the purpose of my Torah is, my guidance is to liberate from human oppression, religious and political, so that I can establish a group of people through whom I can reveal my testimony, the prophets. And I must do this. So one difference is these were people who didn't have the character, didn't have the courage, didn't even have the knowledge, didn't have the understanding to choose to trust Yahweh to deliver them. And so Yahweh had to intervene and overpower the situation. That is a difference between that covenant and the reaffirmation of the covenant when he returns. He's not going to overpower the situation.
So,
folks, if you want to be part of that reestablishment of the covenant, you need to make your move. God's not going to overpower the situation. He is not going to be inflexible. He is not going to drag you kicking and screaming. You either come to him of your own volition and do it now, or it ain't going to happen. That is a difference. A huge difference. He needed to get them out. He doesn't need you to come to him. There's enough of us that come to him. He's not into the numbers game. He's delighted with those who have come to him. Plenty enough to make his eternity and ours interesting. Now, we would all benefit, and it would be more enjoyable if thousands, thousands more hear Yahweh's testimony and decide that it is in their best interest to listen to him and to act upon what he is instructing. But he is not going to force you into it as he did the children of Israel. Then he says, they broke my covenant. The reason I have to reaffirm it is not because I need to change what I'm offering. It's not because I need to come up with something different. It's not because what I offered was too hard or too oppressive. Exactly the opposite. It was liberating. And it's exceedingly easy. Yod does all the work. We get to enjoy the benefits. But they broke it. That's the reason it has to be repaired. we humans, particularly Israel and Yehuda, broke the covenant. They sought to nullify their relationship. They thought that their own ways, their religion, and the religion of the surrounding communities was somehow more appealing.
Yeah.
They chose their own path. And frankly, God did the one thing he had to do. He blinded Israel. And if he hadn't blinded Israel, then that God-forsaken religion where they walk around with the rodent hats would be beguiling and compelling as opposed to just stifling. You know, you want to wear a rat's hat? That's just fine. You want to wear a morning suit all day? That's just fine. You don't want to work at anything other than being religious, and your religion is unbelievably antiquated and stifling, even though it was invented in the 18th century. That's your choice, but thank God you don't know Yahweh's name. Thank God you're clueless as to his covenant. Thank God you haven't got a gnat's understanding of what the invitations to be called out and meet are all about. Thank God you can't understand the prophets in the Torah. Because if you did, you would besmirch Yahweh's name. You'd make what we're doing now darn near impossible to differentiate Yahweh's name, his testimony, his covenant, his Torah, his invitations to meet from what those nincompoops are doing. But they're so lost in their rodent's hats and their morning suits. They aren't corrupting Yahweh's message at all. They're completely out on their own. So they broke my covenant. And God made it such that for a very long period of time, he blinded them. Created a wonderful opportunity for us. It's the best job in the world to be able to enthusiastically reveal Yahweh's testimony. And to do it for the people who, for the first time, are beginning to see, for the first time, have ears to hear, and are coming home to Yah. Relationally, they broke my covenant, so he has to repair it. Although for a time, this is in the perfect, call perfect, I acted with them. This is Wa Anoki Baal Hahem. There was a period of time that Yahweh acted as if he was the boss. He really did. He had to. He spoke from the top of the mountain. He said, you know, I'm going to feed you. Bosses do that. I'm going to direct you. Bosses do that. I'm going to instruct you. Bosses do that. I'm going to protect you. And I'm going to set some conditions. Bosses do all those kinds of things. It was a period of time where they needed a boss, quite frankly. Is there a chance that Baal there should be? I acted as a boss over them? Yeah. As if they were mine.
Think about it. That's what any good parent does.
Yep.
There are times
sometimes
when a child is out of control and you have to step in.
Correct.
And be that role.
Correct. Correct. Because when Yahweh was talking with Pharaoh, he says, not directly, but through Moshe, he says, I want you to tell Pharaoh the following. Israel is like a son to me. And if you're not going to let my son go, if you're going to continue to kill my son, I'm going to take your sons. So Yahweh viewed Israel as his children. It's Bnei Yisrael, the sons of Israel. You know, so he's not saying, I'm marrying my sons. So there is a real possibility here, even though I translated for the chapter as a husband, even though I asked it as a leader in a position of authority, that, you know, Baal could mean Baal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was needed. You know, it was like herding cats. Yahweh through the prophets. This is Jeremiah 31:32. And you know, if I'm wrong here, you know, I'm wrong. But it's certainly worth a thought. So all of those things are different. Because, listen, whether you choose to render Baal a husband or Lord, Yahweh is not going to be our Lord, isn't our Lord even now, has no interest in being our Lord going forward, Dad, Father. And there is no reason for him to be intensely aggressive with us. The whole purpose of eternity is for us to interact in such a way that the relationship is stimulating and fun for all of us. And God does not need to liberate us from religion and politics, because the only ones that are going to be around at this time are going to be those that chose to disassociate from religion and politics. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to do any of these things because of anyone who survived having broken his covenant, because all of us who are going to be the beneficiaries of this have chosen to accept the terms and conditions of his covenant. Man, my view on the terms and conditions of the covenant is actually that the five things God asks of us are all gifts. There might as well be 10 benefits of the covenant, because the five things that he asks of us are benefits.
Mm-hmm.
To walk away from our country, from the babble of man, from human customs and religious schemes, from our father's house. Boy, in my case, thank goodness for that. And then to walk to Yahweh and become perfected in his eyes. To trust and rely on Yahweh as opposed to human schemes. He's reliable. He's dependable. He has our best interests, and he is in a position to really help us to trust and rely on Yahweh. That's a benefit, not a liability. To be perfected by God is a benefit, not a liability. To disassociate from the stupidity of politics on the right and on the left, and from the absolute idiocy of religion, benefits, not a liability. To closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of his relationship agreement is one of the greatest joys of life. And to be circumcised, to say, I understand the sign of the covenant, and I want to be cut into this covenant. I want to please my Father, tangibly demonstrating that I understand that this is what cuts me in to this agreement. They're all benefits. As we turn to the next line, Yahweh says, accordingly, and as a consequence, keep. This is the covenant, specifically the covenant, Habaret, the family-only relationship agreement. Do you think it was plural? Did he proceed it by saying,
only one.
This is a new covenant?
The definite article.
Yeah. Habaret, Zoth, specifically, key, indeed, which to enjoy the benefits of the relationship, Asher, I will cut. I will create through separation and establishing. Call imperfect with ongoing benefits. With the house of Yisrael, much later, after those days. Now, it doesn't mention right here Yehudah. You know why?
Yes.
Why? Why didn't he mention Yehudah? Why did he, say with Yisrael and Yehudah in the preamble, and he's now saying just the house of Yisrael?
Yeah, it's the same way Dove. He put them all together for a reason.
Right. They're all one. Yehudah is one of the 12 tribes of Yisrael. It's the most special of the 12. but now it's integrated into Yisrael. The first thing he says, I'm going to reunite, restore the relationship between Yisrael and Yehudah, and then restore that relationship with myself. And so Yisrael was exclusive in the first statement and inclusive now in this statement. It's the home of those who engage and endure with God. Much later after those days, prophetically declares Yahweh. So much later, out of something that happened 3,500 years ago, I would say this qualifies much later. And it's going to be with a united Israel. You can't even speak of a united Israel today, even though we're, 12 years and change from this event occurring. Because there isn't anybody that really knows what tribe they are from, whether they are Israelite or from the house of Yahud. And if there was ever a disunited country, I don't think you have a country where there is a more extreme divide between the socialist, exceedingly hard left secularists who lean towards communist, and the right-wing religious wackos that are just the antithesis of it. It is a country exceedingly divided, and it's a country that's still filled with Muslims. So it's going to be with the united house of Israel, much later, prophetically declares Yahweh. And he says here now, I will provide Nathan gift. I'm going to literally give, produce, offer, bestow accordingly. The gift, what is the gift he's going to give?
It's always the Torah. That was the gift on the mountain.
Right. So Nathan, the gift I am giving is my Torah, right?
That, yeah.
Within them.
Teaching. Yeah.
Inside of them. Ba kareb hem. In their core being. So that it's part of their inner person, part of their thought process and psychology, influencing their conscience and animating their lives. I always write it, you know, say it as written on in the fabric of their lives, integrated within the fabric of their lives. That's what God is saying here. So the gift is he's going to put his Torah guidance inside of us. Okay, there, numbskull Christians. How can you have a goddamn New Testament that condemns the Torah if the solution that God is putting in place upon his return, wholesale integration of the Torah? I mean, how could you claim that this passage is the justification for your New Testament when it completely negates it? They're not saying I'm putting in a New Testament? No, I'm installing my Torah. My guidance, my instruction, my teaching within them. I will provide as a gift, accordingly, my Torah guidance inside of them. Now, that is a tremendous difference, folks, from what we're doing now. Yeah, but what even existed is what he said is going to be different than the one that was in place when he took the children of Israel out of human oppression in Egypt. Why? Then he revealed his Torah on a document that Moshe scribed. Correct?
Correct.
Now, my understanding is that he didn't take that Torah that Moshe wrote over the 40 days and 40 nights and didn't do an opening up of the heart and did a little surgery and say, all right, each of you, I'm going to take, Moshe's going to create however hundreds of thousands of you there are, and he's going to take and put a copy of this inside of you. Good luck with your heart reading it, by the way, but Nonetheless, he's going to put it inside it. I don't think that happened. I think that every Israelite over the chasm of 2,500 years has had the opportunity to read and observe the Torah if they wish to, or ignore it. And most have chosen to ignore it. Oh, I understand that in a synagogue, they'll dress it up like a little whore and parade it up and down the aisles and kiss it as they preach from their Talmud. But God is saying, no, I'm putting it inside of you this time. If it's inside of you, can you reject it?
No. Nope.
Can you create a Talmud?
You can't ignore it.
No. You can't ignore it. You can't reject it. No. You can't change it. You can't add to it. You can't delete from it. It is part of your operating system at that point. Now, for God to do that and not be forceful, as he was back then, the only way that God can do that is if it is a gift that we willingly accept.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We all have to say, yeah, I want
free will. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Sign me up.
Sign me up. I want that. I'd accept that yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I want
it. Heaven, no. Yeah.
But you know,
I have a quick question.
Sure.
How does he do that? There's two types of people at the end of between what goes on in Yom Kippurim and then when he returns on Sukkot. There are people that are light beings. That's us. I assume that we would already have that done to us, those that were rescued, harvested. Now, these people, they're still human beings. They've just accepted Yah's terms and conditions. What does he do? I mean, is it something like, I only speculated one thing, because I've been talking with a friend of ours about this, and the only thing I can come up with, you know, when Moshe goes up the hill, up the mountain, and he comes back all aglow because he's in close proximity.
Okay, Kirk, were you taught how to breathe?
No.
Were you taught how to digest food?
No, sir.
No.
Okay, that's simple.
Okay, so... Yeah, in fact, you probably learned
you just
how
breathe,
to
you just blow it into us like the stomach.
Uh-huh. So, do you think that God would be capable of, since your instinct, and we've been doing this show now for an hour tonight, have you once thought about breathing?
Only on the golf course.
Okay, is there any point tonight that you think about, you know, I really need to process what my optic nerves are sending to my brain so I can read and see.
Okay, point taken.
Okay, all right. So my guess is that Yahweh can place his teaching and guidance inside of us in such a way that we have much clearer, much more complete understanding, A, of Hebrew.
Yes.
Of what he intended each word to mean and intends each word to mean. We would not need a commentator to explain when he said this is what it means to us. And that if you're trying to decide, should I go right or left, you know, take if you come to a fork in the road, according to Yogi, you just take it. There probably needs to be a few road signs along the way, and I'd like to know if I want to go to a solar system, someplace else in the Milky Way galaxy, and that probably has a different name. I would really like to know how I get there, how I transform energy into matter when I get there, how I then recalibrate that matter back into energy, and I'd like to know what God's time schedule is so I'm not late for a Shabbat celebration or one of the mikre. I really like camping out and having great food, and it sounds like great fun. You know, and if Doe's going to be singing a song, I want to be there to listen. So we have to have what our parents should have given all of us. Our parents should have instilled within us teaching and guidance so that when we encountered life's challenges, we would know the proper way to respond. To teach us such that if two people are telling in the news very different stories, we'd be able to discern what each of them is saying that is truthful and what each of them saying is deceitful, and be able to ascertain the truth. We need to have our Heavenly Father's guidance as our parents should have guided us. And what God is saying, I'm going to give you my guidance. You're going to know. Now, it's my conclusion, and you know, it's a lot of times where it's quite possible as I'm reading these words that my interpretation of them could be wrong. But I'll tell you that far more often than not, I perceive something that no one has dared say or even thought in a couple of thousand years. And the more we learn, the more it appears that, yeah, that really is true.
Yeah, I can validate that remark. And so can you.
Yeah, because it's happened a thousand times over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Now, let me give you one of them is that very early on when I read this, I said, Torah needs to be a lowercase t. Now, in Hebrew, there's no such thing as upper and lowercase. So I'm making a differentiation that only makes sense in modern languages and in English. But if we use the English concept of a title is a capital T, where just guidance and teaching, instruction and direction would be a lowercase t, so that Torah becomes guidance and teaching and direction, then I am convinced that when he is placing his Torah guidance inside of us, that it is not the Torah capital T. It's not.
No, it couldn't be.
It can't be. It can't be Torah capital T. And there's a reason for that. And it has to be Torah lowercase t. Because if you read the Torah, well, the story of Adam and Chawa, it's wonderful up to the point that Satan slithers into the garden, corrupts Yahweh's word, and she bites.
Thing falls apart.
Yep. Yeah, and then he blames her.
Mm-hmm.
And it all falls apart, and then she comes up with ridiculous names for her two boys, and one kills the other. Is there any part of that that says, oh, boy, that was a really happy story. I'm really uplifted.
It's a lesson to be learned that we can appreciate now, but we'll have no use for it.
Right. There's a lesson we can learn now that is really helpful. But once we are part of the covenant with Yahweh and we're experiencing perfection in the garden, we're perfected as his children. We don't want to know that sad part. Why would we want to know that Yahweh wiped out large swaths of humanity in the area around the Black Sea because they got to be belligerent and vicious? I don't want to know that part.
No.
Why do I want to know that Noah endured 40 days and 40 nights bobbing up and down in that boat? That there's no advantage of knowing that. And then if you look at the children of Israel, they come out of Egypt, and the first thing they do is they build a damn idol.
Yeah,
God has to wipe out so many of those that did. There's so much in the Torah that has no function anymore. And if we're going to enjoy eternity with Yahweh, there is so much that we need to know. If God were to explain what it's like to live liberated in the fourth dimension, time, it would so overwhelm our ability to process it would be counterproductive. But if God doesn't teach us how to capitalize in being in a fourth dimension, where time is unlimited, because the absolute minimum number of dimensions for eternity to exist is four. And so we have to be liberated in the fourth dimension. And right now, if we were liberated in the fourth dimension, the the choices, the input would be so overwhelming it would instantly kill us. It's difficult to explain just how radically different four dimensions is from three.
Yeah.
But we would have no idea what to do. We'd have no idea what to choose. We would be overwhelmed. The brilliance of the light, the sounds of the experience, the choices associated with it would be paralyzing, deadly for us. And so God has to equip us to deal with this enormous increase in capability, choices and options. And four dimensions isn't where he's taking us. He's taking us right through four, through five, through six, into seven. That's going to require an enormous amount of guidance. Guidance that is now would be counterproductive for us to know. Guidance which there aren't words to express based upon our current capacity to process. That has to be given to us. And so I think that the guidance and the teaching that Yahweh is giving us going forward will have elements, and nothing will contradict what he's already said. The big celebrations are going to be eternal. We are going to continue to enjoy Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim and Shavuah and Teruah and Yom Kippurim and especially Sukkah. We are going to continue to live our existence on the cadence of 6 plus 1 equals 7 and celebrate the Shabbat. We're going to view Yahweh as our Father. We're going to live as a covenant family. So much of what is in the Torah and God is guiding us to will continue. We're going to be celebrating all that we learned from Yeshayah without having to endure all of the recriminations of the people who had become religious and political. We are not going to be the least bit worried about Hasatan. And so I think it's Torah with a lowercase t. I celebrate it because I think that is so meaningful to where we're going and what Yahweh is offering us. So I think it's Torah, lowercase t, and I'm delighted to have it integrated. And while, yeah, selfishly, I would like, well, bring it right in right now. But if we were to do that, then what would be that we have this very limited time right now where we have to work at it, where we get to work at it, where we get to discover new things. We get to share them. We get to make a difference in people's lives with what we're learning. This is such a short period of time and such a wonderful opportunity. We're living in the most amazing time in the history of the world, with such tremendous rewards for discovering the truth by being especially observant of Yahweh's testimony and listening to God and then thinking about what he has said. Sharing it, that I think it would be a tremendous disservice to the value of all of our lives just to take all that away and say, oh, no, here it is. You can just have it. No, here it is. You can just have it. We need to have to operate in 4, 5, 6, 7 dimensions. But right now, we have this unique opportunity to change lives forever, to enhance the experience for all eternity. I don't want that taken away. Let's celebrate it. Let's enjoy it. You know, I do think that we will bring into eternity some of our past. And the degree that we discerned insights and had the opportunity to share it and it made a difference in somebody being there versus not being there, I don't think there's any reason that God's not going to allow us to celebrate that, to enjoy it. I say, yeah, that was really good. Now let's go out and party. Glad you're here. And he says, then Says, and I will integrate it into their inclinations and their ability to exercise good judgment. I will write it. So I will provide as a gift, accordingly, my Torah guidance within them and integrate it into their inclinations and their ability to exercise good judgment. Wa'al leb him, I will ketab, I will write it. I will inscribe it. So you could say he is going to place it in our hearts. To say that, you need to understand that heart didn't mean a seat of emotions. The heart was the seat of judgment. He's going to integrate his Torah in the place that we make good decisions. That, and those decisions influence our disposition. They influence our character. They influence our thinking. They influence our inclinations. And therefore, he is going to write it there. And it's very different. You know, Yahweh is very much into the written word. He's going to write it. Just like DNA is a written language, he's going to write it. Not going to speak it there. If he writes it, it's permanently inscribed. I bet his penmanship is spectacular. You know what I actually think? I know this is wild, and again, speculation. But if you look at Yahweh's his normal language is Hebrew. I came up with an insight on Hebrew the other day that I want to share with you, by the way. But his normal inclination is language is Hebrew. Hebrew is a two-dimensional language. It reads from left to or right to left. Although all the images in Hebrew and the original language depict three-dimensional constructs. And they're all directional. Well, most of them are directional. But DNA, the language of life, that rascal's three-dimensional.
Yeah. Yep.
What do you think that Yahweh will be able to write his Torah guidance inside of us that is at least three-dimensional? As a language, and maybe four or five dimensional. Just think about the depth of it and what it could do and how much more sophisticated it could be than Hebrew or DNA. All right, here's the thought that I had that I wanted to share on language. So I got two of our edit team were saying to me that we needed to change neck to nesh, N-E-C as the sign that Yahweh is lifting up that we're contributing to. From N-E-C, which is the Strong's lexicon. And I, given a choice, I like the Strong's transliterations because that's the easiest to look up. If you take something that we have and you look up NEC, it's going to come up on Strong, and it's going to come up as sign or banner. If you do NES, it will not.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no C in Hebrew.
There ain't no C in Hebrew, no.
There ain't no C in Hebrew. So it really is NES. And so, Mike said, you know, I really like the idea that it's probably an SH, and that way it would be none, which is a child growing and a seed taking root, and the SH, which is the word.
Words, nutritional
and,
words.
Yeah, and he says, I don't like it. He says, and I said, oh, it's very appealing, but before we go there, I think I better do some homework here and look at the way it is written in the text. And then to also look at its root. And it's written with a shemek. And we've always thought that shemek was the thorn, didn't we? But you know why we thought the shemek was the thorn? Because we were told it was the thorn by the one guy that originally came up with that's what these letters mean. And what we found out is that most of what he had to say about what the letters mean wasn't actually accurate. Like the first letter, he has it as an ox head. When it is clearly a ram's head, all the meaning comes from a ram's head, not from an ox's head. So he was wrong. It's not a thorn. And so if you look at the basis of this in S. You see, the root of it, the actual root is Nesesh. None, Shemek, Shemek. Okay?
Yes.
So, and Shemek, Shemek, guess what that means? It means to lift up, to raise. So this is what Yahweh is lifting up and raising. And so I looked at the letter again. I said, okay, it's not a child that is being born and is growing. And this is something that is taking root that is a thorn. Huh. I just looked at it and said, it's not a thorn. It's a sign. You would think it was a thorn because it's leaning to the left. And so I looked at the letters. Do you know, Kirk, that every letter that leans in Hebrew leans and the direction the letters read, the language reads from right to left. Every letter except one. That's the bad boy in the alphabet. The Gabel. Yeah. The letter that is the first letter in Gomorrah and Goy. That's the bad
Gimel
letter.
The
you don't want the Gimel is the letter. It's the bad letter, and guess it's the only one that reads from left to right. Everything else reads in the direction that we read Hebrew, and every other letter, Yahweh's hands reaching out to the left. The doorway into the home is on the left side of the home. That head of the ram is leading to the left. Right. See, even the rest, the head. Looking to the left, the shepherd's staff leaning down to the left. It's all to the left because that's the way the language reads. Which way is the sign leading? To the left. It's a sign with three letters of type on the sign that is telling you go in the direction that Yahweh's words lead. If you want to be a child and his family, you want to be rooted into his word. It's a sign. That's what Nesh means. And so that was having it was the beautiful thing about having a fact checker. Mike is the fact checker from heaven. I mean, every statement, a definition of a word, date, you name it. If I say it, he will do an investigation and either prove that it's right or wrong. Or if it's even when it's right, he will provide, oh, by the way, here's a page of notes that you may want to add something to this because it even is more than what you originally said. And it is just terrific. And he is the one that brought this up. And what a thrill to find the truth. This is a language that does the very thing that I said was the single most important thing about being useful to you. You know, you don't have to be a great orator. God used Moshe. You don't have to be a perfect person. Yeah, we used Dote. You don't even have to succeed in convincing a single person that Yah was right. He used Yeshaya, Isaiah. You know, there is no indication that Noah knew the stern from the bow of a boat. That he could navigate anywhere. In fact, he didn't have a rudder, so he wasn't chosen because he was a good navigator. Listen, I have said that Abraham was dumb as a stone, that he was not the sharpest tool of the shed. Well, it turns out Abraham was far worse than that. He was a bum. And yet Yahweh managed to make him, cause him to be right and to establish his covenant agreement with a bum, which means he could probably do it with you and me. So, you know, the one thing that God needs of us is to be willing to go where his words lead. That's that dadgum Shemek over there. It's telling you to go where the words lead. The words lean from right to left. Go right to left. Flow right along with his words. That's what he's telling us. That's what he's lifting up. The beauty of the original language. With the exception of the koi. That came out. Which that foot's going the wrong direction. Everything else is going that way. That's the one thing that God needs of us if we're going to work with him, we have to be willing to go where the words lead. So here we are. We'll finish this one statement, and we'll continue next week. So Yahweh said, and this is Yirmiyah 31:31. Accordingly, and as a consequence, this is the covenant to which we can enjoy the benefits of the relationship that I will cut with the house of Yisrael much later than these days, prophetically declares Yahweh. I will provide, Nathan, I will give accordingly my Torah guidance, my teaching and instructions, my directions within them, inside of them, in their very core, is part of their inner person, animating their lives, and integrate it into their inclinations and ability to exercise good judgment upon their preferences and disposition, their character and their thinking. I will write it, and then I will approach them as their God, and they shall be my family. Oh, and then I will approach them as their God, and they will be my family. I want nothing more than that. You want nothing more than that.
Nothing
God
more.
Is offering us the thing that we want more than anything else. I want Yahweh to be my God, and I want to be part of his family. And I want his guidance integrated into my inclinations and ability to exercise good judgment. I want him to write it there. Now, I'm going to tell you that I went to significant lengths to say, you know, God, I don't want you to deprive any of us of this opportunity to search your word and to come to understand what you're offering and to share it with others to transform lives at this point. And I'm going to contradict that ever so slightly. Over the course of these past 20 years that we have been studying Yahweh's Torah guidance, It has become part of our lives. It is already written there. It has a huge influence over our attitude, our disposition. It is the basis of our judgment. It is our character and our thinking. It dominates everything that we are. It's how we view the world. It provides our perspective. It is our source of understanding. It is written there. So this is an increase of what already exists. It is an evolution of what we've already begun. If you like it being integrated into your life, if you want it, if you enjoy having God's perspective, if you like being enlightened and enriched by his teaching, then you're going to love how he's going to expand all of this as he's doing it. This isn't something new in the sense it's a continuation of what we already have, what we are gaining by doing this. This hour and a half that we've just spent, it's exactly what God is offering. Take my words, listen to what I have to say, incorporate them into your life. That's where we are. It's marvelous. I'll tell you what, it's a whole lot better than holding up a Trump Make America Great Again sign. Q sent me, or to be marching No Justice, No Peace. I'm going to tell you, it's a whole lot better. I'm not going to write those slogans on my sign. I'm going to write Yahweh's words on his sign.
This is the path.
I think it's a little, just slightly superior. All right, my friends, have a wonderful Shabbat. I'm sorry that I wasn't with you last Shabbat. Please forgive me. And we look forward to being with you next Shabbat as we'll pick up this story on one is what I think is really one of the most majestic, inspiring, uplifting, educational, enlightening, and liberating statements in the whole of Yahweh's Torah and Prophets. Yirmiyah, which, mind you, is I rise up and live in Yah's shelter. Good night, everyone. Happy Shabbat.
Good night, Joe. Good night, JB.
Good night.
That was fun.